This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 127 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Happy holidays, Max.
Same to you, David. Hope Santa was good to you.
He was. I got lots of R2-D2s, which always makes me happy. But we apologize, but no, we thought family was higher priority than UAVs and... While Max registered his drone, I haven't registered mine yet, so I've got to do that. So we're going to split the difference, and I think we're going to have a longer episode, but we're going to not have it for 2 weeks. What do you think, Max?
Yeah, we'll skip the new year. Do this one this week, and next episode will be the end of the following week, back on our regular Friday schedule.
In 2016, nonetheless.
That's right.
Wow. Well, we better get started. I guess our biggest topic is going to be what all of us should be doing, or at least the FAA thinks we should be doing, and that's registering our drones. And Max took the liberty of registering his, so we'll get a little feedback on what it was like to register his drone. And a lot of the other things, like the AMA and how they're ticked off that you have to register your radio-controlled airplane because it's considered a drone now. And then we'll go on to some other news, like you better register if you're in the Bahamas, trucks that act like Roomba vacuum cleaners, and security drones that chase thieves and drones that net other drones.
All right, registration. The FAA registration website came up right on schedule on December 21st.
And crashed immediately afterwards.
Yeah, heavy usage. The FAA reports that in the first 2 days, they had 45,000 people register on the website. That's about a week now. And don't have any updated numbers. Curious to see how this moves along.
And the billion number you heard was actually the Star Wars revenue, not the billions of people who've registered their UAVs.
That's right. So many people are registering. In the social media, there are lots of differing opinions as to whether or not this is a good idea or not. Some people are very upset, and the usual posts and comments about invasion of privacy by the government and all of that sort of thing. But we do know that the AMA continues to be upset with this process, David.
Yeah, and I kind of agree with them because the recommendations, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm misremembering this, was the recommendations was for UAVs. That was done by the group that was set up by the FAA. They left out radio-controlled aircraft. So the AMA is a little bit perturbed that the FAA has come back and said, well, everybody's got to register no matter what you're doing, whether you're flying a radio-controlled aircraft or a quadcopter. I don't know if I agree with that or not. What's your opinion, Max?
Well, I can see where the FAA is coming from. I mean, they're trying to be, I believe, logically consistent. And because they consider UAVs, drones, quadcopters, small UAS to be aircraft, the FAA says that, well, there's a requirement that aircraft be registered. And they're not making any distinction, really, in terms of the size of the aircraft, other than the 250-gram limit. That's the threshold. Anything over that, the FAA says that's an aircraft, and so it has to be registered. They're also not limiting the definition of the national airspace. So the FAA is, again, we've talked about this, is considering it going right down to the blades of grass, essentially. No low-altitude buffer zone. So that sweeps a lot of model airplane people into this category. Of course, they're not happy, but we also know that the Congress has explicitly excluded model aircraft from the purview of the FAA as long as those model aircraft are flown under a community-based process or organization, which the AMA is. So I guess we might see a bit of a showdown, but it turns out that the FAA is actually still accepting comments on this topic, this topic being what's technically, believe it or not, an interim final rule. But there's an opportunity to collect more comments.
And that's a good thing. And we'll have a link to the show notes. The Academy of Model Aeronautics, the AMA, who we've been talking about, is desperately telling all of their members to send in comments saying that it's not fair that those people who are AMA members are registered with the AMA as coherent flyers, I guess. The other distinction they've said was, and this came out of one of the documents I was reading about, Part 47 of the regulations is the 333 exemption. There's a distinction between Part 47 and Part 48. Part 48 is, will allow an owner or registered multiple small unmanned aircraft for a single $5 fee, providing the owner is an individual, and this is the big part, intended use of small unmanned aircraft is non-commercial, i.e. hobby or recreation. Small UASs intended for other uses will require a $5 fee for each aircraft registered. UAS can register aircraft under Part 48. But basically, if you're going to fly it right still, if you're going to fly it commercially, you need a 333. This is only for the hobbyists.
Right. This doesn't let you off the hook if you're flying commercially.
And I think there was a little bit of confusion there, I guess, that, you know, that this was a way to circumvent the 333 process. And that's not true. I think it'll be even, I think the FAA will be even worse looking to fine people if they find out that people are advertising that they're registered with the FAA and they're using it for a commercial use. And a 333 is a far different cry than what this registration is.
Yeah, for sure. So as David mentioned, there's the opportunity for comments. That's at the regulations.gov website. And again, we'll have a link to that in the show notes. You have until January 15, 2016 to submit those comments. So if you want to do that, get going. It's the same process. If you submitted comments for the NPRM and for the registration process, this is the same kind of a thing. So as you mentioned, David, I registered. You want to hear about how that went?
I do. I think there's a lot of people who haven't registered yet to listen to the show, and I'm sure that our overseas listeners, and we'll get into a little bit more of that a little bit later, will be curious what the process is like.
And I took some screenshots as I went along, and we'll put them at the bottom of the show notes, the post for this episode. So if you want to see those and follow along, they'll be at the uavdigest.com/127. But basically, you can get in a couple of different ways. You go to the faa.gov website /UAS/registration. There's some other ways to get into it. And you click the register now button. And that just brings you to a splash screen. A welcome screen, we'll call it. You click register my drone, and this is what I wasn't expecting. It's not a big deal. Maybe it's kind of obvious. What you then do is you create an account. So you have to set up an account with your email, and you set a password. That creates an account. You get an email with a verification link. So when that comes through, and for me, it came through immediately. You click that link, brings you back in to the site, to the registration site. There's some fine print you've got to accept. You know, it's the usual. You know, this is a government database, blah, blah, blah. You agree and go on. And then you log in using that email and password that you had just created. So that then brings you to a profile page, and you have to supply some information, your first name, last name, put in your physical address, your mailing address if it's different. And then in, you know, good web fashion, you proceed to checkout. Well, what's the checkout? The checkout is where you're going to give your credit card number. But first, before you put in your credit card information, you go through an acknowledgement of safety guidance. And it lists a number of I wills and I will nots. And you have to check that you've read, understand, and intend to follow the safety guidance. So it includes fly below 400 feet, visual line of sight, be aware of FAA airspace requirements. I will not fly directly over people. I will not fly over stadiums and sports events. I will not fly near emergency response efforts, such as fires. I will not fly near aircraft, especially near airports. I will not fly under the influence. Then you check that you've read that and agreed to it. Click next, and now you can enter in your credit card information, your billing address. If it's the same as your mailing address that you've previously entered, you can check a little box there, and so you don't have to put that in again. And then it just asks you to confirm your order, billing address, payment info. It says that, you know, your credit card is going to be billed or charged the $5 and that you'll receive a credit for it shortly. And that brings you to a page where you get your registration number. There's a little certificate. The certificate, which is titled Small UAS Certificate of Registration, not only is it for small UAS, but it's a small certificate. It's just a, you know, very small little thing. You could actually, I think, fold this in half and stick it in your wallet. I think it's about the size of a credit card. And you can print it from the web.
It's a wallet card.
It's a wallet card.
You can have it with you when you're flying.
Right. Maybe you could even get it laminated and put it in. And then you also get a confirmation email that's got that same registration certificate in there. And you're done. Now, I went in again afterwards to see if there's a way to maintain this, because some of the questions that have come up, for example, are what happens if you sell or give away your UAS, your quadcopter? The advice is that you need to unregister yourself, and the new owner is supposed to then start their own registration. I didn't offhand see how that's in here. Maybe that's yet to come. Probably not that important that it's there now. I would say the whole process maybe took around 10 minutes, I guess. It's basically pretty simple, but it's just a number of steps.
Well, it sort of sounds painless. I'm just curious, you know, when the 19th of January comes and the period's at the end, will the system crash again while everyone's registering their drones because they've waited till hoping possibly this would go away? But I don't think it's going to go away, folks.
No, and I also think we're not going to have to wait until then for it to crash, because I actually tried a couple of hours ago to get in again, and I couldn't. So I don't know if the system went down or what, but if at first you don't succeed, you know, try again. We did see some other interesting documents come out of the FAA recently. There's something, this new requirements for registering and marking small unmanned aircraft document information, which points to a PDF that's really designed, it says, for the FISDOs, the Flight Standards District Office Aviation Safety Inspectors. And it gives them some guidance about their role with small UAS in this brave new world.
Which is good. And for a lot of our listeners, a FISDO is your
point of contact to the FAA if you're a pilot. I mean, we need to start as people who are cross-trained between being a pilot and UAVs. Some of the terms that the FAA is throwing around, they're not being very cooperative with. But a FISDO is your best friend in the area.
Yes.
And they are, and if you get to know them and they know who you are, they will be your best friend and they will help you navigate the waters. Air safety inspectors, or ASIs, they're based at the FISDO. And when you have a flight check, normally you go to the FISDO and you get the air safety inspector to do your flight check. So they're going to do surveillance, investigation, and enforcement. Start off with ASIs should be prepared to support small UAS activity within their geographic responsibility. I guess we should ask our resident pilots if there's a easy way to find out where someone's local FISDO is. We'll have to reach out to our pilot friends, Max Trescott and Rob Mark, to see how we can maybe get a link on our show notes for how to find your local FISDO. The use of risk-based decision-making and compliance philosophy, along with current practice and procedures, should be used to support proper surveillance and vigilance over small UAS operations in the national airspace. In other words, you guys are flying aircraft. You're going to be treated like aircraft, and they should be doing intelligent, thoughtful, risk-based decision-making, which means that, you know, think it through. Was there any risk? No, then you guys should be fine. If there was a challenge there, then they're going to report it.
Also, another role for the aviation safety inspectors during the conduct of incident, occurrence, and complaint investigations involving small UAS. The safety inspectors will ensure that the unmanned aircraft meet the compliance requirements for registration and marking. So, you know, this is addressing a question that many people have raised, which is, how is the FAA going to enforce this? And, you know, here we see that that is being delegated to the FISDOs, the local level, and the aviation safety inspectors. And it goes on to talk about some other aspects of this. The document is an overview and repeats kind of the, you know, the essential elements of the registration requirements, the interim final rule. So it makes for some good reading. We'll have links to that in the show notes as well. And, you know, this, it's sort of starting to unfold in terms of, you know, who's got what responsibility and what roles do different people have in this. I don't know that it's completely thought out all the way through, and we'll talk about that in a little while concerning the requirement that registration has to be done by U.S. citizens. But, you know, I think these are things that can be worked out.
Look at it this way, Max. It gives us lots to talk about in 2016.
No shortage of topics to talk about.
Why don't we take a break a little bit from registration and talk some news? I kind of like this. The headline was, an alternative to drones, company testing self-driving Roomba-like delivery robots. Now, anybody who knows what a Roomba is, it's iRobot's self-learning, self-cleaning vacuum cleaner that runs around the floor, has a little home, and you hit the button and it runs around and finds the dirt and comes back to its home and you empty it and vacuums your house by itself. Well, Starship Technologies, which was founded by two people who founded Skype, our favorite thing, that as long as it works, is set to do some trucks or delivery trucks that are based on Roomba, that they'll take off from the headquarters, they'll run their pattern, and then they'll deliver their packages and return home, and they're safer than drones carrying packages.
I guess, and they're also looking for these things to be environmentally effective ways to deliver packages and safe and all that. They're pretty decent size. They carry, according to the company press release, sort of the equivalent of two grocery bags worth of stuff. And they say that these robots can complete their local deliveries within 5 to 30 minutes from a hub or a retail outlet. And they say for 10 to 15 times less than the cost of current last mile delivery alternatives. So I don't know where, I guess these things have to go down the road, right? How can, I'm not exactly sure how this works. They're autonomous, right? They, according to the company, Starship Technologies, they have navigation and obstacle avoidance software. So I guess they're autonomous.
But that doesn't mean the people driving around them have navigation and optical and obstacle avoidance software.
You know, wetware, yeah.
We've talked about airborne drone delivery so much. This is, it seems to me, taking a bit of a step back, but being a bit more practical, you know.
And it's interesting how the technologies may overlap. You know, wouldn't it be interesting if all of this work, this development on avoidance technologies and things like that, sense and avoid, gets worked on, you know, with drones in mind, and it ends up being used for, you know, an equally good purpose, but in a completely different kind of vehicle. That might be kind of interesting.
You know, in the World's Fairs in the 50s, I got told by GM that that there would be autonomous cars by now. So it's right up there with my my hovercraft.
Yeah. So you can see these things at their website. It's starship.xyz.
And let's talk about registration again, but this time the weather is nicer. You know, it's better in the Bahamas. Well, you've got to register in the Bahamas now.
Department of Civil Aviation and the Ministry of Transport have announced that effective February 1st, 2016, all drones must be registered. Now, I don't know exactly what all drones means.
Well, that's a pretty inclusive thing. So, but interesting note would be what the Bahamians have for people who are bringing their drones to take pictures of their lovely pink beaches from, like, the United States. Do you have to land and register your drone or whatever? So it's one of those, and again, we'll talk a little bit further in our listener mail about this, but who has to register? I mean, I can't imagine there's a really huge drone community in the Bahamas.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems like the weather for flying is probably much better than here in New England. But it does mention that if you want to import a UAV into the Bahamas, that the owner is going to have to present a certificate of registration from the Department of Civil Aviation to the Department of Customs. Otherwise, Customs isn't going to release the imported UAV to the owner. I would imagine that there probably isn't a giant indigenous drone industry in the Bahamas, so probably the way most people get their quadcopters there is to buy them overseas and have them shipped. So they're saying that with no registration, you know, you can't, it won't be released from customs. So they are giving people a one-month period. Again, it's effective February 1st, but all drones have to be registered by the end of February 2016 in the Bahamas.
So if you're taking it aboard your cruise ship, don't forget to register.
Yeah, or leave it on board. All right. Agriculture. We haven't talked agriculture in a while. I love precision agriculture and the application of UAVs to that area.
Well, the FAA issued a Part 137 Agriculture Aircraft Operations Certification to Yamaha Motor Corporation. And no, it's not for a motorcycle.
Although it is about as big as one. This is the RMAX, R-M-A-X, which is a remotely piloted helicopter that's used for spraying, I think, typically high-value crops. And because your crops spraying, I mean, you can't just carry a pound of whatever the material is you want to apply to the crop. You got to carry a lot of it. So these things weigh around 200 pounds, fully loaded with whatever it is that you are going to spray onto the crops. So the FAA has granted that certification to Yamaha. The article does mention that doesn't mean they can farmers can immediately go out and start using these things, or that Yamaha can immediately start selling these. because there are approvals at the state and local level that have to be met, although they're pretty optimistic about being able to begin shipping these things pretty soon.
Yeah, and we've talked a little bit about the RMAX before. It's been used in Japan for quite a while now.
Yeah, years, I think.
For years. So I think that gave it a leg up for the FAA to implement it. But it looks like a helicopter, flies like a helicopter. It's not like a quadcopter or an a multirotor. I mean, it looks like a giant radio-controlled helicopter with spray wands out the sides. So we'll keep an eye on that one. Maybe we'll put a link to the RMAX in our show notes. But since we mentioned Japan, we should journey over to Japan. And the SEACOM drone, we talk about drones doing evil things. Well, how about drones catching thieves? A security UAV to follow invaders. This was from the dailymail.co.uk. And it will stalk the thieves to get them on videotape. Pretty neat, huh?
Yeah. I guess, you know, we worry about privacy with these things all the time. And a lot of people are very concerned about it. But I guess if the individual is a criminal, maybe we don't care so much about that guy's privacy. So we'll send the drones out to chase them. I guess the idea is that it may be difficult at times to catch somebody who's burglarizing a property or who's trespassing or breaking in or something of that sort. And that, you know, if you've got a little autonomous craft that can chase after the guy, snap a photo of the license plate of the getaway car, I guess, or that sort of thing, that, you know, that might be pretty handy. So the SEACOM drone sounds like it might have some interesting applications. Sounds like it might have some interesting misuses as well.
And Japanese aeronautic law has changed. No drones over areas with a population density of 4,000 people per square kilometer or more. And they ban drones near public events such as festivals or exhibitions. So, well, 4,000 people per square kilometer, I think that takes out Tokyo. You've been there. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's the easy one. It's interesting that, you know, they're going with population density. I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense. It's an interesting way to look at it. What I don't know is how readily available that information is. You know, if you want to go flying in your small village or something, I guess you've got to find some source to tell you what the population density is to know if you're compliant or not. But hey, maybe that's not so difficult. I don't know.
Well, we got to go back to the FAA because the FAA issued, and this is a New York Times article, basically issued a notice to states and local governments on who has the right to enforce drone law.
This is something that's, I think, has been a long time coming. And we've talked about this many, many times when we've looked at or observed local jurisdictions, states or cities or the local governments creating or enacting laws or ordinances or what have you that are applied to drones. And the FAA, we have always thought, owns that purview. The FAA regulates and controls aircraft. States, local governments don't. But we haven't, to my knowledge, heard anything out of the FAA on that until just recently, when some FAA lawyers, some federal lawyers, have actually approached some local legislators who are planning on enacting some anti-drone bills and are being told, hey, well, that's not something that you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, and we've discussed this before. One of our co-hosts on Airplane Geeks is set up a huge thing in Chicago, and Chicago was one of the cities that enacted drone laws. And there are laws on the books, and this is one of those things that happened in California. There are laws on the books to protect things like privacy. There are already privacy laws, and the local jurisdictions have the ability to make those laws. But where you can fly and how you can fly, I don't think the local municipalities have the access to right authority on that airspace.
Yeah, and from this New York Times article, we can see that there's at least one legislator that, you know, took the advice of, well, I don't know if it's advice, but listened to the FAA lawyers and modified what they were introducing as legislation or whatever. But also, some of the others are not so keen on complying with this concept. They don't really think that this right to control their own airspace, if you will, should be taken away from them or claimed as being not their responsibility by the FAA. So I think this is going to kind of build to a pretty intense level. I'm not sure just what path this will follow to get some kind of resolution. And, you know, if it occurs to me, David, if, you know, if all this sounds really, you know, U.S.-centric, for those of you listening from other countries, and we do have quite a large audience from folks who don't live in the United States, but, you know, watching this and what we're struggling through here, it could be instructive in terms of what's happening or could happen or will happen or might happen in your own geographic region. So many of the issues have broader applicability.
Yeah, and unfortunately, this is going to be an argument over states' rights versus federal rights or municipality rights. I mean, it goes down to the local. It's not just state levels that are regulating. I mean, it's cities like municipalities, right, like Chicago. And we've seen local towns, you know. What was it, a year ago or so ago, the town issued the permits to shoot down drones, you know?
The drone so bounties.
I guess we sort of have to apologize that we've sort of gotten bogged down in a lot of legalese recently, but it's where we are here in the United States. And unfortunately, most of the world looks to us when it comes to this stuff and what to do or what not to do. So we try to keep this as globally as possible, but it's big news here in the United States. So we sort of have to cater to that. But let's go to Australia.
Yay. Listener mail feedback. We heard from Grant, our good friend Grant.
And if you don't know Grant, Grant is one of the two people who, Grant and Steve, do Plane Crazy Down Under. And if you don't listen to that show, why not? You should be. Lufthansa and Fraport and DFS test drone technology at Frankfurt Airport. So here we go. This is an international story about Frankfurt, Germany, sent to us from an Australian listener from a American website. So we can't get any more international than that.
Here we go. So yeah, I guess the idea here, and they've been conducting some test flights at the airport, is that you need to inspect a lot of things at the airport, runways, make sure that there's no foreign objects, that things are clear, lighting is all as it should be, you know, all of that kind of thing. And instead of sending a human being driving a vehicle out along the runways, the idea here is that, well, let's send out the drone.
And here it is, like precision agriculture. You want to cover a big distance, and large runways are a big distance, and you want to cover them quickly. You send a drone down to run down to see if there's any issues with the runway. It's a great thing. It would be a great thing to do to launch it from a terminal or the tower if there's a bird strike at the airport, or there might be a damage on a runway. You know, a pilot reports they hit a pothole, or, you know, that's a crater in a runway here in the United States, or a local road. So you could launch a drone to quickly go out and survey it to see if they need to shut down the road. Interestingly enough, it's drones operating in a confined airspace with other aircraft. Oh, wait a minute. That's a no-no, isn't it?
Well, that's what I really especially like about this, because it's the airport itself, it's the aviation interests at the airport who are trying this. I mean, what better group of people to go find ways that these different types of manned and unmanned aircraft can, you know, coexist in this kind of confined, as you say, confined space. It's great. I'm glad the answer isn't just strictly, no, can't do it. We don't want drones, you know, within the boundaries of an airport. Let's have the airport people figure out how to make that work. And I think good things will come from that. So that's kind of the real, to me, the most meaningful thing from the story, besides just, you know, sort of the application here.
You know, we witnessed drones operating with a C-17 doing touch and goes in the background. So it's possible, folks. They can get integrated. So the next one was from Captain Al.
Well, Captain Al said that he was wondering if the FAA made provision for foreign-owned UAVs flying in U.S. airspace in the recent rulings. He said, as an example, a British tourist may be visiting Florida and flies their drone, which subsequently crashes. As we mentioned, you have to be a U.S. citizen to register a UAV, and that creates a problem. Now, DJI and Rotorsport, who were part of the registration task force, they foresaw this as a problem. It's a problem for tourists, and it's also a problem for international drone racing competitions. And if you haven't been looking, drone racing is just exploding. I mean, it's becoming extremely popular. And so DJI and Rotorsport in their task force recommended that some consideration be given to this. But the FAA is saying that, well, yeah, except that the existing statute says that you have to be a U.S. citizen to register an aircraft. And since these are aircraft and that's why we're registering them, then it follows that you have to be a U.S. citizen to register your UAS. So, as I said to Captain Al, that sounds like a problem that needs to be worked out.
And it was followed up by an email that we got today from Stefan. Did the FAA just prohibit RC flying for everybody that's not a U.S. citizen or a permanent resident? And the answer, I guess, is yes. And
I think so.
In radio-controlled aircraft, there's huge international competitions that take place here in the United States, or more to the point, let's keep it simple and local. If you live in Canada and you come across the Niagara Falls from Toronto to the United States to fly your radio-controlled airplane or your drone, you're not allowed to anymore because you're flying in U.S. airspace and you need to be registered, and you can't register unless you're a U.S. citizen.
Hmm.
So when you do fly your DJI Phantom over the falls, make sure you stay on the Canadian side and not the American side. Because, I mean, if you fly over the American side, you're in trouble.
And Stefan closes his email saying, I guess rushing through legislation just never works. And I think that's pretty much exactly what happened. I mean, the registration task force had, 2 weeks to come up with something that I estimated was going to take 6 months. They did come up with something in 2 weeks. But as we see, there's some loose ends here that need to be addressed. I think this is one of them. Hopefully that's something that the FAA intends to take a look at and rectify. But again, this is an opportunity to make that kind of a comment at the regulations.gov website that we talked about earlier in the show, which is open for comments for a few weeks here. So this is your opportunity to say that, yeah, this impacts you, and make that known to the FAA.
Yeah, I don't think you have to be a U.S. citizen to comment on the webpage.
No, you don't. The FAA has mentioned that they did get some comments previously from others who are not U.S. citizens. So, hey, it's all input. I think I'll give them the benefit of the doubt and say the FAA is looking for good thinking, sort of regardless of source. So if you've got some good thinking, send it to the FAA.
So we got a video of the week from Dustin in Denver, Colorado. Love the podcast. Just saw this on the local news. And Michael Hirschner was doing a slalom race in Japan and gets taken out by a UAV filming it.
Or almost does. This thing crashes. like right next to him. I mean, it couldn't have been closer to this ski racer without hitting him. I mean, it hits the snow and explodes into lots of I'll call it shrapnel. Lots of pieces flying everywhere. And this is a big multi-rotor. This is not just a little small hobby thing. This is pretty good size. If this had hit him, it would have hurt him significantly. And we did see that after this incident, the organization that's sponsors this racing banned drones from from the rest of the event.
And you know, we talked about this last year with the Winter Olympics. There was a lot of the downhill was filmed by UAVs. NBC had one filming the ski jumping and etc. So safety first, folks. You know, maybe they need to put a bigger camera on it and fly it a little less close to the course.
Yeah, I mean, you can get some dramatic shots if you're, you know, that close to a slalom skier. But I bet this video is going to show up in a lot of places. I think a lot of organizations and people who are, you know, looking to demonstrate the dangers or the potential dangers of these things is going to use that video to illustrate their point. I think we're going to see this used in a lot of places.
Ah, just like the agony of defeat as the guy fell off the ski jump.
Yeah, this came close to that.
He also sent us another Japan story. Japan seems to be big in this episode. Tokyo police are using drones with nets to catch other drones.
Yeah, we heard from a lot of our listeners on this. Drone Mama sent this to us as well. This has been pretty widely reported. Well, it's a net that's suspended from a drone. I guess the idea is use this from a quadcopter. Use this to go out and take out an errant drone. You think that'll work?
Well, they demonstrate it successfully, but it's just sort of weird. It makes perfect sense, but my problem is what happens if it misses, takes out the drone, and the drone land? You know, there's a bit of risk there. You know, it's not. You're trying to scoop it from the sky,
Also, doesn't it come down to who's the more proficient pilot? I mean, so if a chase ensues, if the operator is a better pilot than the Tokyo police pilot, yeah, it's going to be kind of hard to catch, especially with a net. I mean, it's not like, you know, you have to get pretty close in order to net
it. You have to cast a wide net to catch it, that's
yeah,
all.
I guess so. Well, thanks to Dustin and all the others who sent that in.
Yes, Fred and Charlie also. And this was from Fred. I thought you'd get a kick out of this. Video from Airbuzz. And he sent this to me because I claim to like Star Wars, or evidently people think I like Star Wars.
You are a Star Wars nerd, David. This video is so perfectly matched to your interests. So tell us. So what is this video? What's going on here?
If you've seen Return of the Jedi, probably the most famous scene in Return of the Jedi was filmed in Northern California in the Redwoods, which is the great speeder bike chase, where they slowly walk the camera through at a very slow speed and then sped it up. So you watch the speeder bikes come flying through the thing. Well, someone created in the quest to make all of the spaceships in Star Wars into drones, this is another speeder bike that's a modified quadcopter, which they used to simulate that scene in Return of the Jedi, the speeder bike race. It's pretty cool, and it's got a first-person view to it.
Yeah, boy, talk about proficient pilots. This is some really good flying.
Absolutely. So another video of the week, and enjoy, and you know, Star Wars reached $1 billion in sales and it hasn't reached China yet, so we're doing good, and there'll be more movies, so I will be happy, and eventually maybe the drones will show up in the series again.
All right, well, I think that's about it for this episode of the UAV Digest. I want to thank you all for listening. This is our last episode of 2016. You can find us at
Wow, there's a blooper. Max, is there something you need to tell me?
No. Drone Mama's over in the next room, and she even heard that and said, 2015. All right, so it is the last episode for us for 2015. We'll see you next time, 2016. Our next episode will be January 8th, I believe. So you can watch for us then. You've got a little long episode to kind of tide you over. Show notes are at the UAVdigest.com/127.
Before we go, what do you predict for 20? Let's get it on down. What do you expect to see in 2016?
We better see the NPRM results come through.
Because I'm sure if we go back and listen to our 2014 last episode, we both said we'd see the NPRM and it didn't show up.
Yeah, we should see the FAA's proposal based on the comments. They certainly had a long time to consider this. This registration thing is in some ways kind of a dry run for some of this, but it's going to include a lot more, because that's going to cover the commercial operation. That's going to cover things like operator certification or licensing.
Foreign nationals operating UAVs in the UAS.
Right, all of that. So it's obviously, I think it's a much larger task to establish those regulations. So we should see those in 2016. We should see maybe some...
How about package delivery?
I'm gonna say no. We won't see that in 2016.
Yay! My prediction.
Yes,
Max and I will be still doing this, and we will be still talking about registration.
All right.
So with that, we'll say this is David in Philly
and Max in Hartford.
Happy New Year! We look forward to talking to you in 2016, and thanks for listening.